WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It's the 6th of January, 2021. Happy New Year. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. I'm going to start the show off with a yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is episode 527, The Clever Chemist Matter, with an original air date of the 17th of March, 1957.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Harry Branson at Philadelphia Mutual Life and Casualty Company.
Oh, hello, Harry. What's with you?
John, I have a case I'd like you to handle for us. It's somewhat unusual.
Have you ever handed me one that wasn't completely screwy?
I said unusual.
And I said screwy. So now that we understand each other, what's it all about?
Well, absolutely nothing yet. But I'm very apprehensive about one of our clients.
Oh, Harry, you're the biggest worry wart I ever knew.
What was that?
I said, who is this client?
Dr. Walter Merrill.
Merrill? The scientist?
That's right.
Nobel Prize winner? The man who worked out the molecular orbital contraction, something or other?
Yes, yes, that's the one. As I say, John, I'm worried.
Well, who wouldn't be about him? I'll be right down to see you.
Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Philadelphia Mutual Life and Casualty Insurance Company in Philadelphia. Where else? Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Clever Chemist matter. Expense of transportation and incidentals, Hartford to New York to Philadelphia. I didn't even stop to check my bag, but headed directly for the Philly Mutual building on Walnut Street. Harry Branson is a good insurance man, but a great worrier. Nonetheless, he'd given me some pretty important information, too. And after all, what do we live for? Hey, yeah, keep the change.
Thanks, Doc.
John, what took you so long?
Oh, now, what's the matter, Harry? Forget to pay the rent on your office or just forgot the key?
No, John, as a matter of fact, I have the key right... This is hardly the place for levity.
Well, surely you haven't been waiting here on the sidewalk ever since you called me.
No, I haven't, but by checking plane schedules, I was able to determine when you'd arrive almost to the minute and not wanting to waste time taking you upstairs to the office.
Pretty urgent matter, huh?
Well, you should be here shortly.
What? Well, now, usually I arrange these things myself, Harry.
Yes, and how we pay...
Out of you. Oh, Harry, you touch me to the quick.
Oh, now, please don't misunderstand me. I don't mean that there's ever anything really dishonest about your expense account.
Well,
it's only...
you ought to. Believe me, I'll pad it to the hilt if I think I can get away with it.
Anyway, the most important reason for engaging the car was so that you can leave immediately...
Malaga?
Yes, New Jersey. It's a...
Is that where Dr. Merrill is?
Yes. As is his custom, he chooses to work in some isolated spot where he can't possibly be disturbed. He and his colleague, that is.
Colleague? I always heard that he worked alone, freelance.
And you heard right. However, he now has a professor, Theodore Nash, with him.
Nash?
One of our... According to Dr. Merrill.
Never heard of him.
John, they're working together on what I'm sure is some top secret project.
Oh? Oh, say, wait. Didn't Merrill have something to do with the early rocket experiments?
Precisely. Which is why I suspect their present work may have something to do with the space satellite or intercontinental missiles or something of the sort.
Yeah, possible. But what has all this got to do with you?
Their insurance. Dr. Merrill has had a policy with us for some years. $25,000.
Oh, and...
he took out a policy for $10,000.
Beneficiary?
Nash made Dr. Merrill his beneficiary.
Oh, well, that sort of thing is often done between men working together, Harry. You know that.
Yes, yeah, so that if anything happens to one, the other will be financially able to carry on what they've started.
Sure, right.
Which is no doubt why Dr. Merrill changed the beneficiary of his policy to Theodore Nash.
So? What's the worry?
No sooner was the change made than I received a letter of protest from Dr. Merrill's daughter.
Who's she?
Mrs. Howard Harding. She and her husband live in West Philadelphia. He's a welder for an aviation company, I think.
Well, what did she base her protest on, Harry?
She claims her father must have been coerced into changing the policy.
Oh, now, wait a minute. That sounds like the hungry relative who complains about being cut out of the will.
It might. If Mrs. Harding weren't a perfectly well-balanced, intelligent, and I'm sure quite unselfish person, a completely...
Is she good-looking?
Well, yes.
And real sweet to you?
Yes, yeah, she is. Now, John, I don't know what you're trying to imply.
They do it every time.
John.
Particularly when there's a bit of money involved. Good-looking insurance broker like you. And you're a bachelor, too, aren't you, Harry?
John, you're pulling my leg.
Oh, Harry. But then I guess we're all suckers for someone like that.
That has nothing to do with it. I've had these hunches before, John, and they've always been right. Even you will have to admit that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll confess that in the cases I've handled for you so far... Why don't you call up Dr. Merrill?
I think the quaint old fellow would die rather than have a phone near enough to disturb him in his work. Oh, there's your rental car waiting at the curb. So off you go, John, and see what you can find out.
Okay, Harry. It all sounds like a lot of nothing you're worried about, but as long as you're willing to pay for it. And I always did like South Jersey this time of year. I drove across the Delaware River Bridge into Jersey and headed for Route 45 to Westville, Woodbury, and finally Pittman, where I picked up Route 47. What Harriet said was true. These hunches of his had a remarkable way of panning out. And yet, who was I to complain? After a pleasant hour's drive through cranberry bog and farm country, through miles of orchards and the intoxicating odor of the peach blossoms, I pulled into the quiet little town of Malaga. Population, I'd say around 500. First stop, the post office.
Dr. Merrill?
Yeah, sure.
You go back the way you came, about a mile, till you see the name Wampus Bung.
Wampus what?
Wampus means cat. Bung, bungalow. Wampus Bung.
Yeah.
Yeah, the doctor and the professor got the fourth cottage beyond it. White one with a fence around it.
Yeah, good, thanks.
And if you don't mind, you can take their mail out to them. They haven't been in to pick it up 4 or 5 days now.
Oh, nothing wrong, is there?
Well, who'd know the way those two keep to themselves? You'd think whatever they're working on was the atomic bomb.
Yeah, well...
Just to be sure, you let them know that you're at the gate now before you try to go through the fence.
Oh, what's that supposed to mean?
The professor sees you prowling around, he's liable to take a shot at you.
As I drove back and toward the edge of Little Malaga Lake, the idea of getting shot at by anyone living in this peaceful, quiet place seemed ridiculous. The lake itself, by the way, looked pretty inviting. I made a mental note to come back here on my own sometime after the fishing season opened. As the postmaster had indicated, the fourth cottage beyond Wampus Bung was heavily fenced in, so I gave notice of my arrival. I had barely left the car when the door of the little cottage opened.
Yes? Who is it?
Dr. Merrill?
Oh, yes.
My name is Dollar, sir. Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator.
Harry... Branson?
Yes, sir, that's right. Harry Branson sent me down here to see you.
Come in. I'm most glad to see you. Please, come into the house.
All right, thank you. Is Professor Nash here?
In the laboratory. But please,
as
come
he spoke,
into the
sliding
house.
Door on the garage at the side of the house opened. A rather swarthy man stepped out, quickly closed the door, and threw a heavy bolt on it. Then looked over toward us suspiciously.
Yes, because it's better that you and I talk in private, alone.
Doctor, who is that?
Yes, Professor.
If we have a visitor, why do you not bring him here where we can both speak to him?
Yes, of course. This is Mr. Johnny Dollar, Professor Theodore Nash.
Mr. Dollar?
I do, Professor. I'm from your insurance company. Just making a little routine checkup.
Oh, fine. I'm very glad to see you. As a matter of fact, I wish to talk with you. How do you do? Now, come into the laboratory.
Professor, do you think it wise...
Oh, of course, Doctor. Since he is not a man of science, I'm sure there is no harm in his seeing it. And you have an experiment going, remember?
But I wish to
Mr.
speak
Dollar,
to him alone.
Within these four walls, the genius of Dr. Merrill and my own poor efforts are creating things that will startle the world.
Outside, the small building looked like an ordinary two-car garage, someone in need of paint and repair. But inside, it was immaculate and loaded with scientific equipment of all shapes and sorts and sizes. There were racks of test tubes, bottles of chemicals, beakers, a centrifuge, machines and apparatus I'd never seen before, that I imagine much of the world never dreamed of. And all of it as neat as a pin, not so much as a stirring rod out of place.
Ah, look, Doctor. The polymerization step is almost complete.
Eh?
Now you must continue the molecular balance check immediately.
Oh, yes. And you must both leave me. This must not be seen by anyone.
Yeah, we understand, Doctor. We understand.
I hope you will pardon me, Mr. Dollar.
Yes, of course, Doctor.
Oh, come, Mr. Dollar.
Yes, I will lock the door. Yes.
He does require privacy, doesn't he?
Yes.
Oh, hey, you're not going to bolt that door, are you?
Oh, of course not. Force of habit, I guess. Oh, it is he who keeps things locked so tightly when he's working. Unnecessarily so. But then genius is permitted his idiosyncrasies, huh?
Harry Branson seems to think you two may be working on something to do with guided missiles.
Very perceptive man. But that is something we must not speak about. Now, why have you come here, Mr. Dollar?
Well, like I said, just a routine checkup. We usually do this when a sizable policy has changed.
Oh, there is something unusual about two men working together on important things, ensuring in each other's favor?
Well, no.
But when his daughter perhaps objects...
You know Dr. Merrill's daughter?
Oh, I know about her, and about her unfortunate marriage to that day laborer.
Nothing wrong with day labor, Professor.
Yeah, but one who waits for a great man like the doctor to die so that he can get his hands on the insurance money.
You think that's why his daughter objected to the change?
Of course. But his money will be used to further his work by me. And, of course, for the good of humanity.
I see. Well, how soon do you think the doctor will be through with his experiment?
An hour, perhaps two. And then he will call me in to assist him with the next, the crucial step.
Why don't I run in town, arrange for a place to stay, grab a bite to eat, and then come back here, huh?
If you like. I'm sorry we have no room in the cottage.
No, don't give it a second thought. I'll see you later. Something of Harry Branson's hunch had passed on to me. A strange feeling about the whole setup. There was something wrong about both Merrill and Nash, particularly the latter. Something I couldn't quite put my finger on. Was Dr. Merrill afraid of Nash? I don't know. Item two, a dollar even for a quick bite in a little cafe along the highway after I'd made arrangements for a room for the night in a private home. It was not much over an hour later when I drove back to the little cottage by the lake. And then I heard it. Someone pounding on the door of the laboratory from the inside. Someone calling for help. Professor!
Open the door!
But the lock's on the inside! Turn the lock!
No!
What?
The bolt on the outside, please!
Bolt here on the outside. Oh, what are you...
Oh, thank heaven.
Good Lord, Professor, what happened to you? You look like you've been run over by... Dr. Merrill.
Too late. Too late.
Professor, what happened here?
He beat me. Threw acid at me.
The doctor?
No, the man. Then he killed the doctor with a gun. He killed him.
Who, Professor? Who?
I don't know.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment.
Democracy. To the many who have lived under tyranny, democracy comes as a guiding light, shining on a brighter future. That is because democracy stands for the establishment of government conceived from deep thought and free choice, rather than being based on accident and force. It is also normal that the free choice of a democratic government happens because people who choose their own government are directed by true interests in the welfare of mankind. Democracy has been proven to be mankind's greatest legacy of freedom.
Now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Clever Chemist Matter.
Expense account item 3, $10, for the services of one Dr. Frederick Foote, the only resident medico in the little town of Malaga, New Jersey. After pronouncing Dr. Walter Merrill dead, he took the badly beaten Professor Nash to his office clinic. While waiting for Nash to get in good enough shape to talk, I ran up item 4, 10 cents, phone call to the sheriff, who promised to come over as soon as he could enlist the aid of the nearby state police. Finally, Dr. Foote gave the word.
But I suggest you talk with him as little as possible, Mr. Dollar.
In pretty bad shape, huh, Dr. Foote?
The intruder not only beat him severely, but threw a bottle of acid in his face.
Oh?
Professor Nash will never have the use of his left eye again because of that nitric acid.
Has Nash said anything that might help us identify the assailant and killer?
No. Now, please don't talk with him too long. Professor?
Yes. Yes.
Hello, Professor.
Oh, Mr. Dollar. I will never see again with my left eye. He has told me.
Yes, I know. I'm sorry.
But the great Dr. Merrill, he is dead. What a loss.
Professor. Professor, tell me, did you see the man who attacked you?
Yes.
Can you describe him at all?
Yes, you know, young, not more than 30, 5 feet, 6 or 8, very heavy,
yes,
stocky, and black curly hair.
Yeah?
Hands like a working man, a laborer. Come.
Have you ever seen this man before?
No, I...
Oh, here. Some water.
Thank you, thank you.
Do you know why he came in and attacked you and Dr. Murray?
No.
Was he after something there in the laboratory?
No, only to kill Dr. Merrill. I tried to defend him.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dollar, but I think that's enough.
Yes, yes, okay, Dr. Foote. I think I've heard enough. I managed to get back to the cottage by the lake before the police arrived and came up with one very damning piece of evidence. In one of the bedrooms, I found a picture of a wedding couple. It was inscribed, "Love to the dearest father in the world." And next to the bride stood a man who answered perfectly the description Professor Nash had just given me. The husband of Dr. Merrill's daughter, Howard Harding. And then I thought of what Nash had said about Harding. His antagonism, his conviction that Harding was the one who resented the change in the insurance policy. But there was something else, too. That had happened when I talked with Nash in the doctor's office that... By the time I got back to the laboratory, the sheriff and state police arrived. The sheriff, I'm afraid, mussed up any prints that might have been left on the bottle of acid. However, in the weeds outside, a state trooper found the pistol, a .38 caliber Luger that had killed Dr. Merrill. Fingerprints had apparently been wiped off, but the gun was carefully... Fingerprints. Before taking off on a mad dash back to Philadelphia, I stopped at Dr. Foote's and picked up one water tumbler. Item 5, $3.70 for a tank full of gas. Item 6, 50 cents, parking in Philadelphia as close as possible to Harry Branson's office.
John, what have you found out about Dr. Merrill?
Harry, he's dead.
Well, oh, dear.
Now listen, write down the address of Mr. and Mrs. Howard Harding for me.
His daughter, does she know?
No, she doesn't know yet, and I hope I can avoid telling her before I write it down, will you, man?
Well, yes, of course,
take this. Don't unwrap it, but see that it gets to Ray Kemper at the Federal Bureau, fast. I'll check with him about it later, thanks.
But, now, John...
Harry, this is one time this expense account of mine is going to save you a lot of money. I think. I don't know how many red lights I skipped on the drive out to West Philadelphia, but I felt like a hound dog in a hot scent. The home of Mr. and Mrs. Howard Harding turned out to be in a nice, quiet residential area. I was met at the door by the girl in the wedding picture. A tall, very nice-looking blonde in her late 20s.
Oh, yes?
Mrs. Harding?
I'm Terry Harding.
Well, I'm Johnny Dollar from your father's insurance company.
Oh, good. Come in. Perhaps you can help me make him do something about that policy of his.
Well, that isn't exactly...
Someone has poisoned Daddy's mind, Mr. Dollar.
Oh? What do you mean?
It isn't that I need the money if Daddy dies, which heaven forbid.
No. It doesn't exactly look as though you do.
No, of course we don't. Howard's been doing so wonderfully at Colonial Aviation.
Yes, apparently. And I'd had a notion he was just a laborer or something.
Oh, dear, no. That's what Daddy called him because... Well, because he wasn't too fond of Howard. And that is the way Howard started before we were married, but now he's one of the officers of the company.
Where is he, Mrs. Harding?
Well, as a matter of fact, I thought you were Howard when you drove up just now. He's been fishing.
Fishing?
On some little lake over in Jersey. He goes every Saturday all by himself.
Malaga Lake?
No, Malaga's where Daddy was. Mm-hmm. He and that...
That what, Mrs. Harding?
Well, I don't know. It's Howard, I guess.
What do you mean?
Howard has never liked or trusted him, even though they've never actually met. When Daddy changed his insurance to name that professor... There is something wrong about that man, Mr. Dollar.
What, Mrs. Harding?
I don't know. Daddy always worked alone until he came along. Daddy's such an alert, bright-eyed little busybody in spite of his age.
That... Your father...
Like a cute little wound-up spring, hopping about like a...
Mrs. Harding.
Yes?
Mrs. Harding, when I saw your father...
You've seen Daddy. Well, then you know what I mean.
He was tired. Almost in a daze. He spoke with difficulty.
Oh, no. You're mistaken. He chatters away like a jaybird. What is it, Mr. Dollar?
Well, he must have been doped. He looked as though...
Hi, honey. Well, I'm just as lousy a fisherman as usual. Not a single... Oh, excuse me.
Mr. Harding, just tell me one thing.
Well, that depends. Who are you?
Mr. Dollar's from the insurance company, darling.
Not Johnny Dollar.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I've certainly heard of you. Tell me...
No, you tell me, Harding. Where have you been?
Why, fishing.
Where?
Over in Jersey.
Where in Jersey?
Little private lake.
Where?
Over near Mount Holly. One place I know of where nobody else ever goes, where I can get rid of the cobwebs at my job. Hey, wait a minute, Dollar. What is this?
Harding, you've been identified as the man who murdered Dr. Walter Merrill.
What?
Mrs. Harding. I'm sorry, but it's true.
No.
What are you talking about, Dollar?
You didn't know about it?
Of course not. How could I? Where did it happen? How?
At his place in Malaga.
Oh.
Professor Nash, I'll kill that man.
You'll take it easy. You seem to forget that so far you're the only suspect in the case.
You're out of your mind. If it was anybody, it was that Nash. Never have trusted that man. And the insurance policy. If anybody killed Dr. Merrill, it was that professor.
Now listen to me. Nash was with Dr. Merrill when he was killed there in his laboratory.
Of course he was.
But Nash was attacked also, beaten, acid thrown at him. He lost the sight of one eye because of it.
And I tell you... You sure?
Yes, of course I'm sure. It was I who found them. Nash beating against the inside of the door of that laboratory, crying for help. A door that was bolted on the outside.
But, Dollar, I... You're sure of that?
I'm sure.
Well, I still think... Oh, Terry, I'm sorry, honey. Here, let me...
Howard, it's so terrible.
Better answer that phone, Howard.
Yeah. Hello? Yes? Oh, yes. It's for you, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, thanks.
Terry, come on. You've got to pull yourself together.
Johnny Dollar.
Right.
John, this is Harry Branson. I just received a call from Mr. Kemper at the Federal Bureau.
Yes.
He says he must see you immediately.
Call him back, Harry. Tell him I'll be there in 15 minutes. Harding, just to keep things straight, I wouldn't leave this house if I were you.
Well, now, wait a minute,
just
Dollar.
Just sit tight. I think you're in the clear. More red lights got passed up on my way into the Philadelphia offices of the Bureau. So Ray Kemper felt that whatever he'd found was important. If so, it would back up one of my suspicions. But in view of the circumstances, that bolted door in the laboratory, for instance, how could it?
Important is putting it mildly, Johnny.
The prints you found on the water glass, Ray.
Three sets. One, yours.
Yeah, well, naturally.
Two, Dr. Frederick Foote, who is currently practicing medicine.
I know, in the town of Malaga, New Jersey. That's where the glass came from.
Oh, but the third set of prints.
Yes.
I had to go into the international file for them. And Johnny...
Nash? Theodore Nash?
Nash? Nashevsky.
What?
Theodore Nashevsky, chemist from one of our not-so-friendly countries.
Huh?
Expert on explosives. One time, he was thought to have attempted to enter this country. That was in 1940.
Ray, have you got any pictures on him?
Plenty. From the time he was a kid. Here. Tell me how you picked up these prints.
The beard in this picture. That looks like him, all right. Yeah, this too. With a shaved head. Almost as though he tried to keep changing his appearance.
Johnny,
oh, wait a sec.
This picture of him as a youngster, this eye patch on his left eye.
Our dossier is pretty complete. He was quite an athlete until he injured that eye.
But it doesn't show in these other pictures, and he hasn't a glass eye.
No, his eye always looked perfectly natural. Now, Johnny, if you have information...
Ray, this has done it for me. Thanks.
Hey, now, just a
minute. I'll see you.
Hey, Johnny! This is Kemper. Give me a man to tail Johnny Dollar.
All the way back to Malaga, New Jersey, I hoped my rental car would hold together. It did, in spite of the fact I pushed it all the way. International intrigue is a bit out of my line, but this time, so help me, I was beginning to feel like an FBI man. I stopped at State Police headquarters along the way, and according to them, Nash was off the hook. Not only because of the acid thrown in his face, but even more important, because of my own testimony that I'd found them locked in that laboratory. I stopped again at the lab. Nothing. Then back to Dr. Futsal's.
Very well, Mr. Dollar. When they arrive, I'll insist that they wait for you.
All right, thanks, Doctor. Well, Professor, you're sitting up.
Oh, have they found anything, Mr. Dollar? Have they found the man who attacked us and killed poor Dr. Merrill?
Professor, I think I have.
Oh?
But tell me something.
Yes, of course.
Your government doesn't pay you very well, does it?
Merrill and I were not working for the government, Mr. Dollar. Although, of course, the results of our work...
I'm talking about your government, your own real boss.
I do not understand.
No doubt it's very much interested in anything this country develops in the line of guided missiles, that sort of thing.
Mr. Dollar...
Now, let me go on. Merrill was doing important work. Stuff that would be of great value to any country in the world.
Of course.
Your country would have paid you well for the results of his work. But, brother, they'll never get it.
I do not know what you are talking
money,
about.
Money, the loot from Merrill's insurance, sure. Sure, it was enough to get you out of here after you'd gained the knowledge you need of Merrill's work.
See here, Dollar.
After you'd killed him, before he could give to his country, the United States, what he'd invented.
You are a fool. I was beaten,
too. The poor old man put up a pretty stiff fight, didn't he?
Do you think I would have done this to myself?
You gave yourself away earlier when you reached out for a glass of water I handed you right here in this room. A man who'd lost his sight in one eye would have lost his aim until he got used to it. Funny, though, it didn't come to me until
later. You are mad.
You haven't seen out of that left eye since you were a kid.
I tell you, you are mad.
And a little acid burn to make it look like somebody had thrown it at you would be well worth the alibi it gave you. Fyodor.
Fyodor?
That's right, Fyodor Nashevsky.
Listen to me. You were the one who found us locked in, the door bolted from the outside. You found us.
Yeah, also the cord, the string you used to pull the bolt, too. That you looped over the bolt and pulled after you got inside.
You couldn't have. I dropped it in a vat of acid.
Thanks. I was bluffing. But I made a lucky guess.
What?
Oh, what a brain. Nashevsky, I'm sure glad you're not working on our side. The capsule he fished out of his pocket never got to his mouth. And I'm afraid he won't see very well out of his other eye for a while. My knuckles still hurt. And it was lucky for him that the police arrived. I'm afraid I don't like guys like him. Expense account total, including all the incidentals I could think of, and transportation back to Hartford, $84.35. Remarks? Well, don't beef on this one, Harry. The criminal, in spite of being the named beneficiary, doesn't get paid. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a real close look at a little-known but very dramatic side of Hollywood. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood. It is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone, who also wrote tonight's story. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Harry Bartell, Howard McNear, Forrest Lewis, Jack Crucian, Russell Thorson, Frank Gersel, and Bob Bruce. Musical supervision is by Amerigo Marino.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book. Take a walk. Unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September. Paint a self-portrait. Catch up on a TV series. Do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council. Prior to that FCC obligation, we heard episode 527 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Clever Chemist Matter, with an original air date of the 17th of March, 1957. Interestingly enough, it was produced, directed, and written by Jack Johnstone, who directed our next feature, episode 2 of The Six Shooter, titled The Coward, that had an original air date of the 27th of September, 1953. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks.
James Stewart as The Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. Coleman, America's leader in modern automatic home heating equipment and the National Broadcasting Company, present James Stewart as The Six Shooter, a transcribed series of dramas based on the life of Britt Ponson, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends. Now, in just a moment, immediately following this important announcement, you'll hear Act One of The Six Shooter. Last year, thousands of Americans who tried to get away with carelessness on the highways were killed or permanently injured in traffic accidents. And remember, accidents don't always happen to the other fellow. Unless you are meticulous in your observance of the rules of highway safety, you and your loved ones are vulnerable to the menace of traffic accidents. Every motorist should take an active role in supporting the safety movement in his or her community. Encourage driver training in your high schools. Teach your children the rules of safety on the highway. Remember, the life you save may be your own. Now, Act One of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart.
I had a grandstand seat, a rocking chair on the front porch of the Temple City Hotel. Not that there was much to watch. A couple of women looking at the bonnets in the windows of Bradley's Mercantile and some kids playing mummy peg over in the alley next to the bank. And the checker game in the shadow of a big elm across the street. But it was a couple of days before I was due to pick up some cattle in Atterbury for Mrs. Pritchard. And, well, Temple City seemed as good a place as any to stop over. I was considering taking a little nap when I saw Will. At least that's who I thought it was. He was coming out of the general store carrying a box of groceries. I couldn't be sure, though, because just as he started to climb into a wagon, another man rode up alongside and shut off my view.
Well, look who's in town. You doing the marketing, Will? Thought the women usually did that. But I guess in your case, it ain't such a bad idea to switch things around.
I was hoping I'd run into you, Temple. Two of my cows have been killed this week.
You mean your wife's cows, don't you, Will? It wasn't two, it was three. The boys found another one grazing on my side of the creek this morning. You're going to have to do something about that fence of yours. You won't have no stock left at all.
That fence was all right yesterday.
Maybe. But this is today.
Now, you listen to me, Temple.
I figure it's about time you done the listening, Will. I want your wife's ranch. Ain't made no bones about it. She was willing to sell until you came along.
She ain't willing now.
I'll give you $2 an acre. That's more than a fair price. Anybody will tell you that.
We're not going to be shoved off that land, not for $2 an acre or 20.
Then maybe I'd better talk to Sarah, seeing as how it's her property.
No! No. I'm warning you. You stay away from our ranch and our cattle, or I'll... Or I'll...
Well, go on. Tell me what you'll do, Will. I'd be real interested to find out.
Come on, Bill.
If it was Sarah giving him the warning, I might take it seriously, seeing as how she wears the pants in her family.
A wagon moved in closer where I was sitting. I got a good look at him now. He changed a lot since last time we met up. He was older, and there were a couple of those squint wrinkles between his eyes. Even so, he still could have been more than 23 or 4, seeing as how he was only about 20 when we worked on the West Star Roundup together.
Hey, Will! Will! Hey, Will!
I thought he'd recognize me, but I... Well, I guess I'd changed some, too. I wasn't getting aged or something like that, but I'd ripened up a bit, I guess. Anyway, Will kind of glanced my way and then drove on. And from the way he was holding those reins, I had a pretty good idea of what he was thinking. This Temple fella, he pushed him too far. And if I knew Will, he was getting ready to do something about it. Well, there was no point in trying to run him down now. We'd probably meet up later. So I went into the hotel and looked around for a place to sit down. The clerk behind the desk was playing a game of solitaire.
Howdy, Mr. Ponsett. Something I can do for you?
No, thanks, sir.
Room all right?
Yeah, it's fine. Room's fine.
Real pleasure having you stand with us. Anything you'd like, will you?
The Black Queen.
Huh?
The plays on the King of Diamonds.
Oh, thank you. Like to look at the Denver paper? Just came in on the stage.
No, thanks. Just the same. I was sort of figuring on a little snooze. A little too much racket outside.
I know what you mean. Noah Temple's got a voice that carries all right. I could hear him and Will arguing clear in here.
Yeah.
Don't amount to nothing, though, Mr. Ponsett. They've been squaring off like that ever since Will moved to town and married Sarah Blake.
Oh?
Looks like I'm stuck. Good thing I'm not playing at the gambling hall. I'd be out of 50 bucks. You see, Noah's got the idea of buying Sarah's ranch, and there ain't going to be no stopping him until he buys it.
Will he need her land for any reason?
Sure thinks he does. Now, if I can just get me the ace of spades. 40 years ago, Noah's grandfather started this town. He owned all the acreage between the foothills and the creek out south. Old Temple said it was named for him, as a matter of fact.
Is that so?
But the old man's son, Fred, well, he wasn't much good. First thing you know, he'd sold off nearly everything his dad had left him. When Noah took over, he swore he'd get all the Temple property back again. Guess it sort of stuck in his craw that Temple's wasn't the biggest outfit in the valley no more. Doggone that Black Seven.
How's Noah Temple been doing?
Well, first folks didn't take him serious. They thought he was just a talker like his father. But he sure fooled them. Yeah, today he's got more acres than his granddaddy ever had. There's only one piece of the original Temple setup he ain't been able to buy back. That land of Sarah.
Oh?
Sure was a surprise when Will wouldn't let her sell it. Nobody ever figured he'd stand up to Noah. A man like him.
Was there something wrong with him?
7, 8, 9. What's that? Oh, well, you see, Mr. Ponte, Will's a coward. Missy is, he's yellow clear through. He won't ever wear a gun. If there's a posse being formed, he don't go along. And if there's a fight, he lays low. You can call him names, you can insult him. The way Noah Templeton, he just takes it.
Gee, that sure don't sound like him to me.
You know Will, Mr. Ponsett?
Used to. A couple years ago, we worked around up together.
Oh, that must have been before he moved to Temple City.
Yeah, it's down in Texas. Back there, Willie Techman wasn't afraid of nobody or nothing. And for a youngster, he's mighty fancy with a gun.
Techman?
That's right, yeah.
Oh, but that ain't his name, Mr. Ponsett. Will's name is Fetter.
Oh?
Yeah, Will Fetter. Oh, no wonder you were surprised about him being yellow. You got the wrong man.
Uh-huh.
Well, they must look alike. This friend of yours and Will Fetter.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I do, yeah. Well, I went upstairs to my room, started to pull my boots off, you know. And it's funny, I hadn't been doing anything but sit all day, and my feet hurt worse than I'd been walking 20 miles. Looked out the window. The sun is just about even with the church steeple. I saw it be around 3 o'clock. I had a couple hours before supper, so I let myself down in the bed. Yeah? Well, come on in.
Mr. Ponsett?
Oh, excuse me, ma'am. I didn't know it was a lady.
I'm sorry to bother you, Mr. Ponsett.
Oh, not at all. I wasn't exactly what you'd call busy. Won't you sit down here?
Thank you.
Yeah, wait, I'll get those boots out of your way.
Mr. Ponsett, I'm Will's wife.
Oh, I'm pleased to meet you, ma'am.
Will told me you were in town today. He saw you. And you saw him, didn't you?
Yes, ma'am. At least I thought I did.
Well, you can't tell anyone he's here, Mr. Ponson.
Oh?
You didn't come to Temple City looking for Will, did you? Will thought maybe that was the reason. We heard about what happened in Prescott last winter when you came across Bar Cleaver.
Yeah, well, you heard wrong, ma'am. I didn't come across Cleaver. He came across me. And as for Will,
He's made a new life here. A good life. If he has to go back to prison...
Prison? Oh.
Well, you knew about the bank robbery in Austin and about him breaking out before... You knew, didn't you?
No, ma'am. No, I haven't been back that way since...
Then you wouldn't have told the marshal? But we thought... We were sure. What have I done?
Now, just take it easy, ma'am.
Well, if I hadn't come to see you, nobody would have known it was Will Teckman.
Things have a way of coming out sooner or later. How much longer was Will supposed to serve?
2 years.
Uh-huh. Well, that's not so long when you're young.
We're going to have a baby, Mr. Ponson. But I almost wouldn't want to have him if he was going to grow up knowing his father'd been in prison. Why should Will have to go back? Why?
Well, I guess maybe you'd better ask the judge who sentenced him, ma'am.
What I mean is they say it's so a man will live a decent, respectable life when he comes out. And Will's already living a decent, respectable life. He works hard. He never makes trouble for anybody. He doesn't even wear a gun, and he promised me he never will.
Was that your idea, not wearing a gun?
Before we were married, he told me about the trouble in Austin and how it broke out of prison. I suppose I should have made him go back. But I was so much in love, I couldn't. So I asked him to give me his word he'd never use a gun again. Never even carry one.
It must have been kind of hard on a fellow like Will to keep holding himself back that way.
It hasn't been easy. I've heard what men like Noah Temple call him. But Will takes it. He's kept his word.
This fellow Temple, you know, the way he and Will were going at it today, it sounded like they were heading for trouble.
Won't be anything serious. Will just doesn't want us to be pushed off of the ranch. You can't hold that against him.
No, there's none.
Then you won't tell the marshal over in Atterbury? Or anybody?
Well, I don't imagine Marshal Sanders like me mixing into his business. This is his district. I guess he can take care of it. Anyway, he has so far. But now, look here, I...
Thank you, Mr. Thank
well, now,
you.
Now,
And thanks for Will, too.
Well, after all, you know, most of what she said was true. Sending Will back to prison might do more harm than good. And it wasn't up to me to sit judgment on him. I was going to be leaving town up there, so anyway, and if anything happened after that, it wouldn't be my concern, so... Of course, a man does have certain duties even if he's not wearing a badge. A man who spots a wanted criminal, he's supposed to report it. And I always had before. I scraped some of the mud off my boots and washed my face, put on a clean shirt, and went downstairs into the lobby. clerk is still playing solitaire.
Just beat myself again, Mr. Ponson. I was playing in the gambling hall. I'd be ahead about $140. Pretty good for one afternoon, eh?
Yeah, real good. About time for supper?
Yeah, go right on in. Molly will fix you up. Got baked ham tonight.
Fine.
Oh, say, Mr. Ponson?
Yeah?
Remember us talking about Will Fetter and him being afraid to carry a gun?
Uh-huh.
Well, the darndest thing just happened. Oh, it wasn't any more than 15 minutes ago, I guess everybody's talking about. He went into Bradley's Mercantile and he bought himself a carbine.
Oh?
Of course, he's just trying to bluff Noah Temple. Folks are giving 10 to 1. Will don't even know how to load a rifle. Where you going, Miss Ponson? Dining room's over there.
I guess maybe I'm not hungry yet. Say, whereabouts is Will's ranch? I think maybe I'll take a little ride, maybe work up an appetite.
We'll return to James Stewart as the six-shooter in a moment. First, a word from Coleman, America's leader in modern automatic home heating equipment. When winter comes, does your house shrink like this?
Well, I guess it's time to close off that back room. There's just no way to heat it.
Don't deprive yourself of valuable living space. Get a Coleman automatic heater and enjoy new warmth in the hardest-to-heat room. Get your Coleman oil or gas heater now during Coleman's big bonus sale. You'll get three bonuses.
A new low price.
Yes, now you can get a dependable Coleman oil or gas heater at a new low price.
A new low operating cost.
Coleman saves you up to 25% on heating bills because Coleman gives you maximum heat from your fuel.
And a 32-piece set of Libby Safe Edge glassware worth $14. It's free with your new Coleman heater.
Get three big bonuses during Coleman's big bonus sale. The sale is for a limited time only, so see your Coleman dealer tomorrow. Look for his name in your telephone directory.
Remember, comfort costs so little with a Coleman.
Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponson.
Fetter Ranch was about 2 miles south of town, and from the outside looked neat and comfortable, well kept up. The ground stretching out behind it was good grazing land, though it was worth at least $5 an acre, maybe more. I tied Scar to a cottonwood in the yard and walked up to the door.
About time you got home, Will. Mr. Ponson.
Evening, ma'am.
Come on in.
Will's not here?
No, he was gone when I came back. He must be out tending the stock.
Uh-huh.
What's wrong, Mr. Ponson? You haven't changed your mind, have you?
Where's the Temple Ranch lie from here?
It's all around us. All four sides of our land.
And Temple's ranch house, where's that?
East. Dewey. Well, what's that got to do with it? What's happened?
Will was in town this evening. He bought a rifle.
I don't believe it. He promised me. You're wrong, Mr. Ponson. Will isn't gunning for Noah Temple. He's out tending stock. Well, he'll be home any minute. You'll see.
Maybe.
Where are you going?
I hear Temple's got quite an outfit. Worth paying a visit.
You won't find Will there. He gave me his word he'd never use a gun again. You won't find him!
I headed due east for about a quarter of a mile, and when I came to the edge of Will's property, I saw a sorrel tethered to a fence post. Looked like Will had decided to go the rest of the way on foot, so I climbed out of the saddle and looked around. There was a big break in the fence, but the cattle hadn't made it. That barbed wire had been cut. And there were four heifers and a couple of steers lying just over the Temple boundary. Well, there just wasn't much question about it. They'd been shot. So I crawled through the opening. I went right past a big sign that said, Temple Ranch, trespassers will be shot. I found some footprints. I figured they were Will's. About 30 minutes later, I caught sight of the ranch house. It was built about halfway up the side of a pretty steep hill, big, sprawling building. There was a light inside, and I could just barely make out Noah sitting at a desk working on some papers. And where was Will? He had plenty of time to get here. And I heard his step and swung around. It was one of Temple's hands, pacing up and down near the stable alongside the house. The way he was holding the rifle, it looked like an army sentry instead of a cowhand. All of a sudden, he gave a little gasp. I saw a shadow tighten around his throat. The sentry went down, and there was a struggle. Not very noisy, though. Not noisy enough for Temple to hear it. And then everything was quiet. The shadow stood up. It was Will Tuckman. He was inching his way toward the house, toward the window where Temple was sitting. I came up behind him. I pulled out my gun. He was starting to aim his rifle. Will, drop it, Will. Yeah.
I might have known you'd turn up.
Give me your rifle, Will.
Could get off a shot.
At me, but not at Temple.
Temple gets our ranch and I go to prison, is that it?
Now, we'll talk all about that as soon as we get back to your place. Now, come on. I carried Will's rifle and led the way. About 20 minutes later, we passed another one of Temple's guards. He was dozing, didn't notice it. Still had a couple of miles to go before we'd reached the fence where we'd left the horses. Will was sort of panting for breath. All right, let's rest a minute.
Okay.
I thought you promised your wife you'd never take up a gun again, Will.
Mr. Ponset, I... see them dead heifers over by the fence.
Yeah.
That about wipes our herd out. When I found them, I had to do something. As long as you knew who I was anyway, as long as I was going back to prison, I had to fix it so Sarah wouldn't have the ranch taken away from
me. You wouldn't think a piece of land would be worth everybody getting so excited about.
I've been shoved around, Britt. Ever since I was a kid, I've been shoved around. Even when I held up the Austin Bank, I wasn't the one who...
The one who what?
Nothing. Since I married Sarah, well, I've had to take a lot that other men wouldn't put up with because of her and because of her knowing what I was. This thing with Temple got under my skin. I made up my mind to stand up to him. A man's got to take a stand sometime, somewhere.
I'm sorry, Will, but...
Hey, what's that? Get down, Will!
Yep.
We've got you dead to rights, Vedder. Trespassing.
I ain't alone, Temple. Britt Ponset's with me.
Ponset?
That's right, Temple.
I might have known Vedder wouldn't come along. Well, I guess four of us can take care of two of you. He won't be much use to you, Ponset. Not in a fight. Okay, boys, move in.
I could see one of his boys firing from behind a tree behind him. So I aimed at his arm, and the bullet hit him on the shoulder, and he lurched forward. That meant only three of them now, but they were closer. Will still didn't say anything. He was waiting for me to make the next move. I tossed him the rifle.
Thanks, Britt.
He got to his knees and started across a little clearing. Still all right when he died behind a boulder. I knew where he was heading, too. Noah Temple had been shooting from behind a clump of pines about 50 yards back. For a couple of minutes, I didn't get a chance to watch him. Temple's two guards were on either side of me now. Well, one of them was more than 8-10 feet away. I saw the barrel of his carbine rise up from behind the bush. And only one guard left. About that time, it seemed like he'd had enough. Anyway, I moved across the clearing toward the pine trees where Will had disappeared. Pulled up behind a rock.
Well,
There was Noah Temple. Crouched down low, his gun ready. A little bit of movement in the brush caught my eye. It was Will. He was right behind Temple. And Temple didn't know it. He was looking my way. Will had a perfect shot. I saw Will's finger curl around the trigger. But Will didn't fire. I couldn't figure out what had gotten into him. He didn't fire. And then he threw his rifle to one side and let out a yell.
Temple!
Temple turned and got off a shot. Well, he was surprised he couldn't do much aiming. And then Will was on top of him, twisting the gun out of his hands. And after that, I saw a fight the like of which I'd never seen before in my life. There, Will hit Temple across the face, and he went over backwards. And then Temple kicked, and his foot lifted Will right off the ground. But before Temple could pick himself up, Will was right on top of him again. And Temple tried to reach for his gun, and Will brought his boot right down on Temple's hand. Temple quit reaching. And then Will backed away and let Temple up again. And as soon as Temple was steady again, Will drove his fist right into Temple's stomach. And Temple's hand flew apart, and he was wide open. Will hit him again, and hit him again, and again. And finally, Temple managed to send his fist into Will's face, and Will looked like maybe he was going to go down, but he still had a fight left to land a right that snapped Temple's head right back. And it was Temple that toppled over, and then I knew he wasn't going to get up again, not for quite a while. Feel better, Will?
Yeah, lots better.
You had your chance to kill him. You had a perfect shot. You didn't have to fight him this way.
It's the only way I could fight him, Brett.
Huh?
I had him in my sights. Something kept me from pulling the trigger. Maybe you'll think I'm crazy, but I kept remembering what I'd promised Sarah. That I wouldn't use a gun again. I couldn't pull that trigger, Britt. I just couldn't.
Uh-huh. Well, let's see if we can't get Temple here to a doctor. You know, it looks like he needs one. We left Noah with the doc in Temple City, and I started off for Atterbury. I've made up my mind to tell the marshal about Will, all about him. Sarah and Will, they agreed. They think I should, too. But then again, the way I see it right now, the state of Texas is looking for a gun-toting bank robber named Will Techman, and I just don't think Marshal Sanders would be very much interested in the law-abiding rancher who's called Will Fetter.
America's leader in modern automatic home heating equipment, and the National Broadcasting Company have presented James Stewart as the Six Shooter. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture Thunder Bay. Others in the cast were Michael Ann Barrett, Herb Ellis, Howard McNear, and Will Wright. The Six Shooter is an NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions, and it is based on a character created by Frank Burt. And today's transcribed story was written by him. Special music was by Basil Aslam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. Hal Gibney speaking.
That was episode 2 of The Six Shooter, titled The Coward, with an original air date of the 27th of September, 1953. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio here in Medford. Thanks for listening. This show is...